Hello, everybody. Welcome once again to another episode of the Under the Cage podcast. I am your host, Coach Sky, and today we are joined by UFC veteran Austin Lane. Austin,
what up, man?
Thank you so much for joining us today.
No, man. Thanks for having me. Yeah. It's super impressive how you can go like 8 rounds of sparring and you have to come here and do a podcast, man. Like, more props to you. That's insane.
Yeah. It's always the last round that gets you touched up, too.
Yeah,
I managed to jack my arm up on the very last exchange of the last round, but... No, yeah, I really do appreciate you sitting down here with us. You are actually the first UFC vet we've had on. So,
oh, right on, man. Awesome. I feel honored. Yeah.
Really appreciate that. So the way I like to do these things, it's going to be a little different with you because you have a sort of a different pre-fight career. But tell us a little bit about what you were doing before you started MMA and how that transitioned to you joining the MMA world and that sort of thing.
Yeah, so back in 2010, I was drafted by the Jacksonville Jaguars. Played here for 3 seasons, and during those 3 seasons here in Jacksonville, I started to do MMA training, and it was a way to increase my hand speed. I was a defensive end, right? So defensive end, it's all about hips and hand speed. So I took knowledge over of an MMA gym called Bulldog Boxing, and during the off season, started training my hands. You know, and every off season, I gradually did more and more up until the point where it was an MMA gym. So I started doing jiu-jitsu a little bit. My first time, I'll never forget, rolling jiu-jitsu was with this guy named Joe, who at the time was a purple belt. And he might have been like 150, 160. Yeah. And, you know, obviously ego here, I'm like 270 pounds. There's no this guy can tap me. There's no this guy can sub me. And I shit you not, man, he tapped me out 4 times in 5 minutes. You know, it was my first time ever rolling with somebody. So after that humbling experience, I'm like, there's something to this jiu-jitsu, right? So then I started doing jiu-jitsu on top of that, and lo and behold, it was good for my hips, right? So then that also kind of was integrated in my football movements and things like that. So by the time I was done playing football in the NFL, and that was 5 years, I knew MMA was going to be in my back pocket.
Right. How did the NFL react to you doing that in the offseason? Because it's like... It's not exactly running track, you know?
Yeah. Lo and behold, they didn't know a lot about what I was doing. To the point when I was in Chicago, I actually did a jiu-jitsu tournament. I won the tournament, won a cash prize, had to go out the back door because if I would have accepted that, that would have violated my NFL contract. So I'm pretty sure like the statute of limitations were all good now. That was like 10 years ago. So hopefully I won't get in trouble for that now, man. But no, it was one of those things where, you know, I kind of had to keep it hush-hush. Like they knew I was like training my hands. But they didn't know I was, like, starting to spar and, like, roll around and grapple and things like that. If they probably would have known that, I would have been in trouble.
Huh. See, I'll tell you, I had a guy a long time ago when I first started. He was FSU's starting quarterback, came in and wanted to train with us. And I was terrified as a gym owner because I'm like, Jesus, God, if he gets hurt, I'm going to get burned to the ground by a bunch of psychotic frat boys, you know? I feel for your coach on that when you're in there throwing hands. That had to be a little nail-bitey, like, oh, God, what's going to happen?
Yeah, no, for sure. Thankfully, I mean, I rolled and I sparred with a bunch of cool guys who understood what was up. You know, like, I wasn't trying to knock anybody out. I was trying to get my hand speed up. And then, like I said, by the time I was done playing football, then I was like, all right, he's done playing football. Now let's go a little harder on this dude.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah.
that's fun. So the training that you did with the NFL, how much did that like kind of help in this, you know, that kind of drive that high level professional preparation for sport?
You know, obviously the mindset of being a professional athlete, that helped me out a lot, especially with MMA where it's a little more of an individual sport. Like you still have your teammates, you have your coaches, you have your support system, but at the end of the day, it's just you in there, right? And that's where your mentality, your work ethic, and how you approach the game comes into play. I would say the biggest difference from my transition from training is that when I played football, my mindset, my training capabilities, it was all geared towards a 7-second play, right? Mm-hmm. Because football, it's a game of explosiveness, but it's very quick explosiveness, right? Every play can last anywhere from 4 to 7 seconds. In MMA, you're talking about a 15-minute fight, you know, at the pro level. So when we talk about that, I did have to change a lot in terms of my strength and conditioning. I had to put the ego aside and said, I can't bench press, you know, 380, 400 pounds anymore because that's going to take away from my cardio. I can't squat super heavy anymore. It's got to be for more reps now because that'll take away from my cardio. So once I kind of tailored everything a little more towards the transition of the cardio-based sport, that's where I really started to flourish.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So on touching on something you said there, the psychology between the two, you know, like being out there with a team versus being out there, even in the early parts of it, like, did that kind of throw you a little bit? I mean, even when you were just starting out, you know, you're amateur and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Is that kind of a weird thing to not have the team with you and all that?
You know, it, yes and no. I think with football, obviously, having played at the highest level, like, I was super blessed, learned a lot of life lessons. But I always had 10 guys that I could depend on as well, right? And it doesn't really matter how well you do in football. If the guy next to you isn't doing his job, you won't get the shine either, right? So you're only as strong as the collective. In fighting, it can be the same thing where you're only as strong as your teammates, you're only as strong as the coaches and how much energy they put into you. But at the end of the day, it's only you in that cage, right? So it's the ultimate highs of the highs and the lowest of the lows. And I always say my first amateur fight, I fought in a honky-tonk, knocked the guy out. The rush that I got from that in front of maybe 300 people compared to my first start in the NFL where I'm playing in front of 60,000 people, that rush in the honky-tonk was astronomically more than ever playing in an NFL game. And that was really eye-opening to me because I didn't think it was going to be like that, right? But there's nothing like getting in that cage, you know, hearing it lock and just putting all that time, effort, and energy into that opponent across from you. It's something that a lot of people will never know. And it's the reason why I have respect for anybody, whether they're amateur, their first fight, or a 20-year veteran that chooses to get in there. I have nothing but respect for them and what they do. So in terms of the mindset, it's definitely different in terms of you have your teammates to depend on in football as opposed in MMA. It can be a very lonely sport, but it's also a very rewarding sport.
Yeah. So, yeah, all the good on you, but all the bad just on you too. You
Correct.
Know, it's, yeah.
Yeah.
You get all the high to yourself and you get all the low to yourself of it. So that's kind of a neat thing about it. Do you think, I'm trying to think of the words. So when I take my amateur types to the cage that first time, it's like so hard to keep their emotions in check. Mm-hmm. It is so amped for them. Do you think that was different for you or?
Like, no, it honestly was because football, in my opinion, should be a very emotional sport, you know, especially having playing defense, right? I think offense, you have to be more calm and calculated, right? It's about knowing the play. It's about reading the defense. On defense, it's read and react, right? So you can just kind of pin your ears back and go. And that requires a lot of emotion. So in terms of my playing style, when I played in the league, I was a very emotional guy. I mean, I would get in fights in training camp nonstop. All I had to hear was a whistle blow, an extra shove, and I'm swinging, man.
Yeah.
And that's just the way that it was. That's the way I was wired. So I did have to control some of that once I got to MMA. You know, my first couple amateur fights, I was able to just, you know, get by with my athleticism and my power, and I could still bring some of that emotion into the cage. But now it's more controlled chaos, right? Like, you can't be so lackadaisical and calm that you don't have that dog within you. But at the same time, if you have too much of that dog in you from the get-go, you exhaust wasted energy, you know, you start feeling tired, you have an adrenaline dump. So it's about finding that balance between the threshold of I'm going to F you up and all right, let's just flow, let's be calm, let's be collected.
Yeah, F you up at the right moment.
At the right moment, yeah.
You got to let it out when the right time.
Correct.
Like, bing, okay, now we go, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. So when you were, before you started fighting, I'm assuming you watched MMA and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Who were the guys that kind of stuck out to you then?
Well, you know, I mean, I grew up, so I must have been in third or fourth grade, and my grandmother went to a garage sale and got a VHS tape, and that was UFC 1, and brought it back to my house, and I remember watching with my stepdad. I had no idea what happened in UFC 1. My stepdad knew, and it was Ken Shamrock versus, you know, Hoyce Gracie.
Yeah.
And, you know, you see Shamrock jacked to the gills, right? I mean, 200 and something pounds. And you see this scrawny Hoyce Gracie come out in his gi. And I remember my stepdad turning to me. He's like, hey, Oz, who thinks going to win this fight? And I'm like, oh, Ken Shamrock all day, man. How could he not? Like, look at this dude, you know? And like, I remember watching this previous fight. Like, he's knocking fools out. There's no way this, like, 160-pound guy, you know, zero emotion in this gi, in this karate uniform, as I called it at the time, could get the job done. And lo and behold, he did. I think it was an armbar, if I'm not mistaken. So there it really opened my eyes in terms of mastering your craft, right? Mastering your discipline, being so enthralled and lost in the art that, you know, it doesn't matter how you present yourself, what you look like, you're a trained assassin. And then that's what I got from UFC 1. Now, obviously, growing up, I mean, then I was like the sideshows of the Brock Lesnars,
yeah.
Right? The Frank Mirs and everything. But, you know, I mean, growing up to me, it was Anderson Silva, you know, because I always felt like he was the true mixed martial artist. He was the true guy that could put it all together, jiu-jitsu, striking, Muay Thai, clinching, things like that. That, at that time when he first came out, was something we had never seen before. And that's what I respect about this sport, that it's always evolving. And I remember watching Anderson Silva thinking, like, this is different. This is new. This is unseen before. And that, to me, was kind of like the moment where it's like, man, there's something to this.
Yeah. That was weird, too, because Anderson showed up in the UFC. He wasn't exactly Anderson when he was in
No. His first couple of fights,
like
he was going to
standout, like, yeah. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Chonin caught him with that. And then suddenly, just, yeah. For whatever reason, in the UFC, he really found his stride, man.
I know.
It was a trip. And it's funny how you talk about that Gracie thing, man. Like, how one fight can just change your whole perspective. Like, I got into all this stuff because I watched Frank Mir take out Tank Abbott.
Yeah.
That's the only way I know when I started is I'm like, I don't know when that fight happened, because the next day I was like, okay, the big redneck guy who looks like everyone that used to kick my ass growing up got tore up by the guy who at the time was much smaller. So same kind of thing. See here. So when you got through your pro stuff, or you finished your amateur, you went on to your pro stuff. Mm-hmm. I saw a few of those at Combat Night and stuff over the years. You got that call up to the UFC. Had you been talking to them even beforehand? Just kind of one of those things where they were like, get these fights and we'll...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, they were interested with me because the thing about the UFC, it's also not just your abilities, but your story as well. Mm-hmm. I think the fact that I was a former NFL player definitely put me on the radar. Obviously, they were intrigued by me. So we knew that they were interested, but you still have to put those fights together. You still have to put the wins together. And I felt like I eventually earned my shot with the UFC, you know. Yeah. And like, I don't think it was ever given to me, which I appreciate. You know, I took a little more of a longer road, turned down some more offers that were a lot more lucrative. But it was always my goal to get to the UFC. You know, in my opinion, the UFC is the elite. It's the top echelon of combat sports. Mm-hmm. And when I first started that, my first day as an amateur, that was the goal from day one. So I knew, like, once I would get a lot of callers from different organizations, the UFC was the only promotion for me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You've developed a lot over the years too, since those early days at Combat Night, just between that and your more recent fights, even the ones that didn't go your way, you looked really, really sharp. And honestly, just the last time I was in here, we sparred about a year ago to today when we sparred. Like, you're a completely different fighter. Like, you've really been making the leaps and bounds that...
I appreciate that. Yeah, you know, to me, it really came down to investing more in the basics once again. You know, I think with my athleticism and my background, I have an edge over a lot of people, right? So I can move. You know, I do have that power, things like that. What gets it done is the basics, especially at heavyweight, which I've, you know, I've learned the hard way a couple of times. All it takes is one shot. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a 135er, you can make a couple mistakes here, there, you get caught in the chin, maybe your eye gets cut open a little bit, but you still live to fight another round. With heavyweight, you make one mistake and that can be it. So to me, I had to take that upon myself and think, all right, it's not like football where it's play next play. You know, you make a mistake, you make a good play, whatever the case may be, you play next play. That's not fighting, man. You make one mistake, it's over. If you make a good play, it's over in your favor. So, yeah, I mean, I think what you saw today from sparring me is more of a guy who's a lot more patient, who's trying to find his openings, using feints a little more, and obviously not putting myself in high-risk situations.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Heavyweight seems more of a sniper's game than a machine gun game.
Yeah, yeah, you know, yeah.
That one bullet changes it more than bantamweight. How did the UFC compare to your time with the NFL? Like, as far as the show, the promotion, all that stuff, is that kind of a samey, differenty? Or?
Oh no, it's drastically different. And not to knock the UFC or anything, but obviously with the NFL, like, you don't got to pay for your flights. You know, you're not paying for your hotel. All your food's covered. I mean, the NFL, you're talking about a multi-billion-dollar industry, right? And now it's becoming a global sport. Like, there's a reason why the Super Bowl is the most popular thing to watch in the United States, right? I mean, football is king with all due respect to MMA, especially in this country. So in football and the NFL, man, you get taken care of very well. Not to say the UFC doesn't do that, but, you know, you have to make your way for your own food. You have to pay for your teammates' flights, things like that. So there definitely are incentives and there are perks, but I think it's two different ballparks when we're talking about, like, how much you get taken care of as an NFL player versus a UFC fighter. Now, if you're an elite, top of the level, a Conor McGregor, a style bender, a champion even in the UFC, then I think there's a different perk there as well. Now, I haven't received that perk yet. The plan is to get to that perk one day. But just from where I'm sitting right now, kind of, you know, in the middle tier of the UFC and having been in the middle tier of the NFL is drastically different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm kind of stunned here that, like, they don't pay for your food and travel. That's kind of
I mean, like, they'll pay for your, like, I mean, for instance, so I flew to Australia, right? I'm a big dude. 20-hour flight. I wasn't going to sit just in coach because I need some leg room. So I had to upgrade myself then, obviously, and sit in business class where I had a little more leg room, you know, and that's just, that's the nature of the beast. Now, once again, when I become champion one day, when I become, you know, a top 10 fighter one day, then maybe we're talking about having some extra benefits where it's like, you know what, we'll cover the first class, you know, we'll cover this, we'll cover that. But in my opinion, you have to earn that first, and I get to earn that.
Yeah. I guess that makes probably somewhere in the contract negotiations something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Fans a little different. How's that been?
Like, no, honestly, I mean the fandoms. It's the same. You know, when I was playing football, Twitter and social media was in its infancy. Mm-hmm. So, like, if you messed up on a play, you'd hear it every once in a while, but nothing major. I mean, nowadays, you mess up on a play, you cost your team the game, or you lose a fight, you cost someone a lot of money. People will let you know about it, right? So, I honestly think that the fans are comparable, but I will say this. When I played football and people would be like, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that? It was coming from a place where these people probably played some high school football, maybe Pop Warner football. They have some sort of experience. When we talk about stepping in a cage and fighting somebody and someone having an opinion, I have a hard time believing that all these people that are quote-unquote experts that you see on TikTok all the time have actually been in a cage. Have actually been in a fight. You know, I've even been in like a schoolyard fight. So when we're talking about that, man, that's the biggest difference to me is at least in football, I feel like people have some sort of experience and some sort of baseline how to state their claims. I feel like a lot of people in MMA, and maybe you train it, so maybe you have some sort of recollection, but a lot of these people, a lot of these casuals, if you will, have never been in a cage, have never been in a fight, and have zero idea what it takes to even step in there in the first place.
Yeah, half the internet ones haven't even been to a live fight to yell stupid crap from the crowd.
Yeah, so
I don't know. It's something. There's something weirdly psychological about that. I think I talked with Mike Lee about this a little bit. It's just for some reason, people that have no experience in fighting feel they have some inherent expertise in it. That I guess you don't see that with other sports. You don't. Nobody thinks I played football twice when I was in middle school. I could probably outplay you, but for some reason, a big roided up dude might think, like, I can take him. And
I just think that fighting goes back to, like, our true primal nature, right? I think it's in everyone's genetic code. I really do. I think the lucky ones recognize that and still carry on and play out that genetic code. I think the unfortunate ones are the ones who never acted on those feelings, who never acted on that. And now I think there's a little bitterness and just like, hey, I'm watching this guy do his thing, having the balls to step in the cage. I wish that I could do that. And I think it's a little more of a jealousy thing than anything. So I think in order to make themselves feel better, to make themselves feel validated, they feel the need to comment, to question, to critique, even though their baselines are totally off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's weird. Again, don't see that in any other sport.
No.
Yeah. So what are your future plans at this point? Do you, like, I'm talking, like, obviously you want to go as far as you can for the UFC, go for the championships and all that. Have you ever thought about what your post-fighting plans are?
No, I mean, you know, I've never been one to have a plan B because I'm always focused on the now. I'm always focused on taking care of things I need to take care of. But I'm not naive to the fact of, you know, I can't fight forever, and I understand that. But thankfully, I've had a pretty good run in broadcast journalism. You know, I mean, I've been doing sports shows now for the past 5 or 6 years. I've been doing radio shows for the past, like, 4 years. So I'll probably definitely fall back on that when it's my time to walk away. Hopefully that's not until a couple, like, 4 or 5 years or 6 years from now. Because my body, my mind, it still feels fantastic. But, no, I mean, having that sports background, obviously I'll be using that to my advantage and talking sports probably for the rest of my life.
Hmm. Think you'll go with MMA commentator or football commentator?
I mean, I love to say, why not a little bit of both, right? Yeah. I think it's the more that you can do. I'm sure ESPN would love that, you know? So literally, I feel like the more you can do, the better. I mean, I can call MMA, I can call basketball, man, I can call a lot of things. So whatever they want to have me do, I'll be willing to do.
You play basketball?
I grew up playing basketball. Yeah, I mean,
you'd be a scary guy down the court.
I had more scholarship offers for basketball than I did for football.
Really?
Believe it or not. I never liked basketball, man, because, like, I was so aggressive, and then I always get the fouls on me and everything. And, like, nowadays, especially, man, like, everyone wants to flop, and everyone wants to be soft, bro, and it's not my mentality, it's not my style, but I still respect basketball.
Yeah. Again, I could see thinking, I'm going to just get out of this, guys.
Yeah.
You're sprinting down.
Yeah.
Well, so the way I kind of tend to, like, wrap these things up, or not so much wrap it up, because you'll have to be a short story, we still got time.
Sure.
Usually, if you've been in this sport long enough, some weird stuff has happened to you. Mm-hmm. And in your case, it could also be NFL stuff.
Football,
like,
yeah.
So if you could pick like one, maybe two stories that really just jump, like they're just that weird, like crazy, what the hell just happened kind of thing.
Yeah.
You pick one or two of those.
How about I give you one football and one MMA one?
Perfect.
All right, cool. So my introduction... My welcome to the NFL rookie, as a lot of vets would call that, was actually a fight that I was involved in like my third or fourth week of NFL training camp. So as a rookie back in 2010, hazing was still a thing, right? Mm-hmm. So you got your eyebrows shaved, you got tied to the goalpost, they put baby powder on you. It was a rough couple weeks, you know. You don't see that anymore now. You know, NFL teams have shut that down.
How does one tie you to a goalpost
exactly? Willingly, I guess, right? Because I really think the alternative would have been even worse.
Yeah.
So, like, you just kind of go with it. All the rookies get tied to a goalpost, and they dump water and baby powder on you, and you got to stay out there for, like, an hour. That's just one of the – it's like a rite of passage,
yeah.
Man. I wasn't too feeling a certain way about it. But the one story that sticks out to me about welcome to NFL moment is – there was a blow-up doll that somebody brought in the locker room. And somebody put it in this one of my teammates' lockers, played on the defensive line with me, and he didn't think it was funny. And I knew exactly who put it in there, and he was a veteran, and he was a captain. I'm not going to out him out, but he was a veteran and a captain, and a guy that's been a staple a long time in the Jaguars organization. So my defensive line teammate finds this blow-up doll, and he's pissed. And he's like, hey, Austin, you know who did this? I'm like, yeah. He goes, who was it? I'm like, I ain't going to say, man. I'm not going to snitch. And he goes, excuse me? I'm like, I'm just not going to snitch. He's like, well, all right, man. I'll remember this one. Okay, cool. So I'm in the cold tub, just chilling. It's after practice and everything. And the cold tub, you know, it's like 40 degrees up to your neck. There's probably like four or five people in there. And this guy who was upset with a blow-up doll in his locker comes in the cold tub and tries to fight me. And when I say tries to fight me, like throwing fists, doing everything. Now, a fight's one thing. A fight when you're in the cold tub, 40-degree water,
yeah.
Is another thing, right? So we're trying to, like, dunk each other, man, and, like, adrenaline's going through, but there's still that shock of the cold tub. So that was a wild experience. Like, thankfully, like, nobody really landed any hard shots or anything like that. Even our strength coach who came in and break it up from, the strength and conditioning locker room, broke it up. He goes, Austin, I know you know how to punch. He's like, if he comes at you again, you have my permission, just throw that two and call it a day. I'm like, all right, enough said. So thankfully, it didn't escalate to that point, but that was like my welcome to the NFL moment, where if it's not enough fighting on the field, now I'm getting a fight in the cold tub in 40-degree water. It was just a nightmare.
With your own teammate.
Yeah. My MMA story was my welcome to the MMA story. It would have been my second MMA fight I fought at Mavericks here in Jacksonville. It was a honky-tonk. Fought a guy from Titusville. Ended up knocking the dude out in the first round with like 10 minutes to spare. Knocked him, sorry, 10 seconds to spare. Knocked him flat, lined him. He was out for a little bit. I get up, hop on the cage. As I'm on the cage, I'm feeling like my foot start to slide. And I look down like, what is happening? Dude's girlfriend tried to take my leg and throw me off the cage. So what she did was she hopped the barricade because she was upset and started to climb up the cage like it was like, you know, Street Fighter or something. And then took my leg and tried to, like, reverse throw me off the cage. And we have pictures of that, too, bro. And it was wild, man, because, like, I almost, like, fell. And if I would have fell on my head, that could have been bad news.
Yeah.
So thankfully, I was able
Nobody
to
Nobody stopped her. Nobody. Between the crowd, the barrier, into the cage.
I think in terms of security and the barricade man, like a jilted lover, bro. When your boo gets messed up like that, you probably like pick up a car. You know what I'm saying? So I think she had that adrenaline going through her. She was upset at me. And she wanted to take it out on me. Thankfully, she didn't roll me off the cage because that could have been bad.
Assuming somebody grabbed her and dragged her.
Needless to say, I think they were asked to politely leave after that whole ordeal. Yeah, man.
Politely bounced off the front door with your forehead.
For sure.
That's a bouncer for a little while. We didn't get too amused at things like that.
No, I believe it. And like, I thought it was funny, man. I'll be honest. I wasn't expecting that, especially my second MMA fight ever. But that was a wild scene.
Yeah, I would imagine. See, there, that would be another one of those differences between, I would think, football and MMA.
Oh, yeah, man. If someone wants to come tackle you in football, get on the field, best of luck to you, but you're getting the shit beat out of you. They're going to get their shots in.
And that's even if they make it to you, you're catching.
Good luck with that.
But in MMA, my God, man, I've gotten out of venues by the skin of my teeth.
You know,
you take out the hometown guy or something and
people feel a certain type of way.
40, 50 of his drunk friends in the, between you and the locker room, too. Yeah. It's like, it'd be like if coming off the field at an away game, you had to go through the bleachers to get to the backyard, you know? So, or the back locker room. Well, I appreciate you sitting down with me, man.
I appreciate you, man.
Yeah, this has been a great interview.
Yeah, it's been fantastic, man. Once again, I mean, people don't know, this guy went like 7 rounds. I saw him going super hard. I mean, I got 5 hard rounds in. But this dude was getting it, and then to sit here and conduct a professional interview like you have, man, it's mad props to you.
I would count the round with you as at least 3 rounds.
So you got about 10 rounds in then, for sure.
But if you got any social media you want to...
Yeah, I mean, I'm not the biggest on social media, but as my PR team has showed me, start pushing it more. So A_train_92, or just type in Austin Lane on Twitter. It's AustinLane_ on Instagram. I'm on Facebook. Also, check out the Brent and Austin show on the Action Sports Jax app. I do a sports show here in Jacksonville. So, appreciate the time, man. Stay casual, dude. I appreciate you.
For sure. Thank you. Thank you, man. As always, like, follow, subscribe, et cetera, et cetera. We'll see you next time.
Awesome.
Cool. Sweet. Thank you, sir.